Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Horror Film Lovers. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and this is going to be the start of and something interesting, considering my co-host Sarah Atkins had to leave. She's been going through a lot of health issues and whatnot, and it's kind of sad, but she's happy. She's doing her thing, and she's trying to get that done. But one of the things she had to do and understand was she had to like drop some things from her schedule that she just couldn't make happen all the time. And so she'll be back to like help out every once in a while. But right now, I'm taking over for sure. And I don't think I'll be looking for a co-host, but I'll have awesome guests, like the awesome guests we have today. Please introduce yourself, sir.
Hi, I'm Michael McGuinn. I'm a producer for Slasher 15 Productions, and I'm an actor. I've worked with lots of different production companies from all around the Virginia, Pennsylvania, Maryland, North Carolina areas, and even abroad.
Yeah, so Michael's been busy, 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 just making this thing or doing that thing, and I don't even know how you found time to do this, but you also had time to do another podcast earlier today. So you're just like I don't know what like I don't know, you're just as busy as I am. So I love it. I think that's awesome. I think that's what we need right now to continue to stay busy.
Absolutely. Like the old saying goes, idle hands are the devil's playpen. Am I right?
I actually just did Idle Hands, the movie for actually, hold on one second. Sorry about that.
That's all.
Just got this today. I think it was today. Yeah, it's today. I can't see it, can you?
Oh, is that the Shout Factory
The
one?
Shout Factory Idle Hands.
Oh.
Yeah, it was great. It's one of like so yeah, we did that for I think it was Horror Knockbusters or Halloween Knockbusters or so. And so we did it for one of the podcasts, and I was no, it was for 90s horror. We did it because, obviously it's a really big awesome horror film. But we're gonna be talking today about something else that's also the devil, has something to do with the devil. It's House of the Devil, which Michael and I had not seen. I don't think you'd seen it, right?
No, this was actually my first time.
This was my first time too. Now, sometimes generally I'll pick movies that I've already seen that I love or whatever, but this year, this season's sort of been kind of weird. I've been picking movies that I've heard really, really great things about or people talk about in the horror world that I've wanted to see. Or there'll be stuff that I've already seen, that I know are great movies. But this one had been lauded like as like a lot of people talk, really, really big about this movie. And Ty West is just doing phenomenal right now. Like he is the it horror director, for a lot of one of the it horror directors. There's a few, but he
Haven't
is
seen, but I love X.
X was wonderful. I need to see Pearl, and the new one comes out this year sometime, I believe. And there's gonna be like a third, to that whole trilogy of things. I forgot whatever the original name was, for the girl. So it's there's X, Pearl, and something else, and I can't wait for all of those. Like I'm just so excited. Ty West has been killing it, and X was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that movie a lot. And if you haven't seen X yet, go see it. I mean, I'm not just saying it because I'm promoting Ty West on the show like that, but I like literally, and you said you loved it, and so were you familiar with this movie? Did you know like it existed?
No, I didn't. And honestly, I gotta be honest, I'm shocked that I didn't, because like I know I hit you up earlier and we were talking, and I was even telling you, I was like, dude, this is a really good movie you chose. Like, I really, my wife and I both sat down and watched it. We both loved it. We thought it was a great movie. And it had a great cast. And there are so many things about this movie that when we get into it, I'll be honest, I got a nice little laundry list of things I'm going to boast about this movie, because I really enjoyed this one a lot. Like out of all the ones we've done so far, because this is our third one together, this one
Yeah.
was definitely my favorite.
Well, I've been giving you mostly like indie. Now, this is an indie movie. Don't get me wrong. This is his first movie. This is completely independent. You can tell, he wasn't restrained by anything in Hollywood standards. Like he was, this was the movie to like begin his career. Now he had done two other films, I believe, before this that were also indie, but this was really the one that sort of got him a notice. I mean, after this, he was able to do like Cabin Fever, I want to say two. I think it was Cabin Fever two. So either two or three.
Both did the first.
Eli Roth did the first. The second, I think, I want to say he did. And then there was like, yeah, I think he did the second. And then the third, I have no idea who did that necessarily. But he had done, Spring Fever was the second one. And I actually really liked that one. I had a lot of fun. It was not, the first movie is kind of hard to like, to beat, you know what I mean? But honestly, Ty West did a great job for a sequel.
Oh, I agree. The way he connected the first story back around together, I thought was actually great.
Yeah, they had it still brought Ryder Strong's character back into the movie and everything, and connected it to the water and the stuff, and it was like all taking place at a prom or something like that or whatever. And I was like, this is a lot of fun. Like, I enjoyed it. The third one I haven't seen, but I haven't heard great reviews of. And then instead of making a fourth, they ended up doing a like shot by shot remake, which I was like, okay, we're thinking Cabin Fever is Psycho year. Like, I don't
Yeah.
know, but
No, I agree with that reboot. I mean, part three too. I mean, it wasn't the best. Sean Ashton was in it. He did a good job in it. But yeah, it was compared to the first two, it was very lackluster. And yeah, the reboot, I remember when I first watched it, I think I got about halfway and I almost kind of had the mentality of like, why do I keep watching this when I can just go back and watch the original, which is the exact same thing, except I think I enjoyed that one more.
Right. But whatever. I just, wasn't I don't really I don't really want to see a shot for shot remake. Like if you did a remake of Cabin Fever, that would have been I would have wanted to check it out just to see for curiosity what people would have done differently than the first. But if you're doing it like the exact same, I just no interest really. I didn't even watch Psycho remake, like the Vince Vaughn one.
Oh,
I just
yeah.
like I'm not no I just don't want to see that. Like it's gonna ruin, I mean the first one's still there, so it doesn't ruin the movie, right? Like it still exists, but it sort of ruins my movie going like enjoyment of it, whatever. So go back to to the movie we were talking about, House of the Devil. So Ty West put this together, and I hadn't really like other than I heard it was a slow burn, that's all I heard. And a lot of his movies are a little slow burn, a lot of buildup of characters and whatnot before anything really crazy happens. But then shit goes crazy, and we'll get into that. But the first thing we the first person we meet other than our lead actress is fucking Dee Wallace in the
I
movie. Like sweet Dee Wallace. I
E.T. Critters.
did you meet her at Scares I Care?
Was it Scares? I know I met her at one. It was either Mad Monster Party or Scares I Care. It was one of the two. But yeah, I got her. I actually have a full size critter. I had her sign his arm
Oh.
for. But she was an absolute sweetheart, though. Absolutely nice. She definitely comes off as that woman when you meet her. You're like, oh, cute.
Yeah,
I would.
I've interviewed
Your
and
mom.
no, I haven't met like I haven't met her daughter, but I've interviewed her daughter and chatted with her, and things. And Gabrielle Stone, wonderful girl. But I was so excited to meet, D, and I even messaged Gabrielle. I was like, I'm gonna go meet your mom, you know,
Yeah.
right? And so I went and I met D, and the first thing she does is look at me and go, "Hello, handsome, how are you doing?" And I was like, "You should like what?" And I was like, "Oh, like she probably says this to everybody, but I, you know, I was like, oh, that's sweet, you know." So I love that. And then, but anyway, seeing her and the landlady, I was like, "Wait, is that D Wallace? That looks like D Wallace." And I was so happy to see that. Now, it kind of like the beginning of the movie. So, by the way, if you haven't seen the movie, go see it on Tubi. It's free on Tubi. Go see it. Don't listen to us right now because we're about to spoil the shit out of the movie. So, like, you're gonna hear everything, including the ending of the movie and all that stuff. So, don't, you know, like, go watch it, come back and listen to the rest of this podcast. Unless you want to just hear the whole story and everything, you don't want to see it. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but you know, whatever floats your boat. Just always got to say that for almost every one of my reviews because we do go into spoilers and we don't let go, you know, most of the time. So begin with you get the house, right? She's looking at the house, and that was like my first thought was like, is this going to be the house of the devil? Is this where the whole movie's going to take place? It's just a part of the movie. It's a part of her character. It's a part of why she's trying to raise, you know, try to get money, more money, you know, so that she can afford to live at that house, which the landlady played by Dee Wallace is just so sweet about it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of Dee Wallace's scenes?
Oh, honestly, I thought she was absolutely perfect for that too. Like, and even like the scripting of that they used for that, like about how she cut her a deal on it, because she's like, "Hey, look, you know, I had a daughter who was going through college once. Trust me, I understand about needing the breaks and stuff." And she's like, "Oh, you're such a sweetheart. You get it and stuff." And then. Even from like, just like the opening credits, even and just like the aesthetics alone,
Like that behind me.
exactly. I mean, I'll tell you right now, but even just like the attire they were wearing and everything else, I want to give a massive shout out and kudos because my wife and I both had to do a double take because we didn't believe it. We looked this movie up on IMDb because we're like. Wow, what was this one of those 80s movies we missed? Because I mean, everything they did for that nailed the 80s filmography. I mean, like just the way like the film looked, the opening credit lettering, the clothing they were all wearing. I mean, it was dead on. And then we're looking up, it's like 2009.
And
Oh my.
it was shot on 16 millimeter and made to look like it was the 80s. Like they were really going all for 80s, like, you know, kind of appeal. Now,
They get an
what?
A. I give him an A plus actually on that one because like I said it got me to the point where like I thought for sure this had to be an 80s movie but then seeing little things like Ty West I'm like well wait a minute I don't remember Ty West being much of a thing in the 80s I don't even think he'd be old enough to be doing much and that's what threw me off that's what got me to want to look up on IMDb and I was like oh my God this is 20 this is 2009
Yeah.
I'm like
He was
holy
probably like three in 83, you know, or whatever, you know, or about that age, you know, 3 to 5. And so it's so funny. Yeah, and the crazy thing was this movie sort of had like a Rosemary's Baby feel to it, which was in the 70s, I believe, if I'm correct. Rosemary's Baby. Let me look that up because I don't wanna say the wrong thing, but I want to say 70, like 8 or
Was there
something.
what was in the 70s? I mean, I could be wrong, but I agree with you. I thought
Oh,
that was
68. So
oh.
even earlier. So somebody who's listening that knows Rosemary's Baby is like, no, it's 68. You know,
The
that was
glaze
68.
over.
But here's the thing that the movie is, you know, this movie had very much a Rosemary's Baby feel to it, Like that's what I got from it, like a Roman Polanski style kind of like slow burn. You don't know what the fuck is going on, and she doesn't know what's going on, and like there gets to be, and then there's the cult aspect and the baby aspect and all of that stuff. And so what I thought was, okay, so maybe this feels like a movie that they were trying to make it look like it was made in 1983 and be like an homage to the, a movie from 1968, or whatever, like a ripoff kind of thing, like at that time where a lot of movies were ripping off other movies, or indie like, or whatever. And that's sort of what I felt like from this movie. And but I mean, it's totally original
Oh yeah.
and different. It's just it has that kind of feel to me. I don't know if that
Oh
makes
no.
sense.
Oh no. I completely understand where you're going with like even what you mentioned earlier about when she goes to that first house and you're here thinking, oh well, this has got to be the house, and then you're like, oh no, it's not. And even the buildup in the beginning. I mean, they're definitely like I think a lot of it is just on like how you like attack that buildup. Because in this particular case, I gotta be honest with you, I enjoyed her build up, because I mean, it really showed like a whole push from the very beginning. It's like she wants to get out. You even go and you meet her roommate at college, so you understand why she wants to move out.
Right.
But you also know she's strapped for that money, and like, and even though against her best friend's wishes about not doing this gig, she still says no, I want this because you don't understand how it is. Even after her friend, like, and you get more about her character too, because even her friend will even say, well, look, my daddy's loaded, I can just get the money for you. And she didn't want to do that. She's like, no, I want to do this. I want to do this. She was trying to be her own,
But she
adult in this.
should have listened to her friend.
Now, I agree with you on that in hindsight.
In hindsight. But see, that's the funny thing is we never think like that in real life, And I think that's another reason I like this movie so much is it felt real. It felt like shit was really happening and stuff, which scary, like that this kind of stuff happens, in real life or whatever. Like, I mean, I don't know if a cult would do stuff on a lunar eclipse or whatever, but maybe they do because I don't know. I particularly I don't know anything about cults. Like I don't know enough about them. I should probably do more research of cults, but I know there were two lunar eclipses in 1983, and this takes place in 1983, by the way.
Excellent. No, that's actually
So
real good.
they actually did, I guess, some research. So I don't know if the lunar eclipses happen every year or anything. I don't think they do. But like there were two big lunar eclipses that happened that year. So it is sort of, I think, a significant time and everything. So I like that, like I like that aspect of we're trying to make it as authentic as possible, I sound like I'm just kissing Ty West's ass,
Oh,
but
no, I mean, dude, I'm right there with you. I mean, I really enjoyed this film a lot. Like this is one that I would easily go back and watch again. And I wouldn't give it a second thought.
I know next season probably I'll do his other one that I've heard really, really good things about, and I'll have you back on for that. That's The Innkeepers, which is also on Tubi.
Oh.
So people should check those out.
I know that movie you're talking about. I haven't seen it yet, but I know the movie you're talking about. I think it had like the green like kind of like screen background with the white lettering. I think it almost had like a black dark mansion in the back or something like that.
Yeah, I think it, something like that. So yeah, it was I saw it years ago and I remember I didn't watch the whole thing. I kind of stopped it after a while because I did sort of get bored. But I think my attention span and my feelings toward movies have sort of changed and shifted a lot recently because like this, I think literally this would have been a movie that I would have turned off. Had I not had, sort of the enjoyment, of it. And what I think what really did draw me in was the characters, the main girl, So let's go into actually the actors, I guess. So there's Jocelyn Donahue. I wasn't familiar with her except she was in Doctor Sleep. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that she was in Doctor Sleep.
Have you seen it?
I did actually. I know some people gave it mixed reviews. I personally, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And honestly, I'm just happy to see Ewan McGregor get a win because I feel bad for him because I think he's a great actor, and I just feel like he always gets lined up in these movies that just don't usually get the most well received in the end, like episode one or the early the prelude Star Wars movies or Jack the Giant Slayer, which I actually personally liked a lot, or the Birds of Prey movie, the Emancipation of Harley Quinn and stuff. But like I said, he's actually a really good actor and stuff, and so I just. I'm happy to see him start to get a few wins in his column where he's getting films are at least starting to get more well received, even though most of his work is good work, and I don't find anything wrong with the movies he's done. It's just I want to
So
get
Ewan
more.
McGregor?
Oh yeah.
You mean Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Yeah.
I mean, if you had to live your life and have at least one thing in your life that you contributed that people really enjoyed and whatnot, having Obi-Wan Kenobi under your belt would be, I mean, but he was awesome about Train Spotting and a bunch of other
Oh yeah, Trace
fantastic films.
work. Although it's kind of funny because you brought that up because one of the other actors in this movie actually was in probably the top franchise. If I could ever have an acting gig, I would love to be in that franchise that he did. Who it was the gentleman who played the son of the family of the occults. He was in Your Next, but he was also in Hatchet 2, and I absolutely. Or the Hatchet series, like that's like my favorite slasher series of all time. Friday 13th used to be, and then when Adam Green came on the scene and started doing those, I was like, wow, this is like a great love letter to those old slashers, and it just kept getting better and better every time, it felt like.
So here's what I realized. So people have talked about this, and I've kind of disputed. They kind of argue with me about this. But so in the 90s, we had Tarantino, Rodriguez, Kevin Smith, a bunch of other filmmakers, indie filmmakers, who kind of all kind of worked together or became friends or helped each other out or would always, be there for one another. 70s and 80s, we had Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola, and I mean Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, all of them all helping each other out and doing amazing things, whatever. People are like, well, what do we have now? Right? And I'm like, we have Ty West, we have Adam Green, we have Adam Wingard, your next director, we have a lot of those guys, and a lot of those guys use the same. E.L. Katz was another one who worked with a lot of those guys and went on and did some amazing work as well. And a lot of those guys ended up going on to work with other, like A.J. Bowen worked with like all of them because they would just, what they would do is they'd all work together and they'd all go, okay, you should work with my buddy A.J., I think. I think that's how it worked. Or whatever, and they would be like, "Oh, I loved AJ in House of the Devil," and I mean, he has one of the best parts of the whole movie, where he's like, "Oh, so you're not the babysitter?" Like, damn,
I
like
love that.
he just killed it, literally.
He's
And
got such a
so.
great personality, like on film. Like I love his presence on film. I think he's got I think he's got a good comical timing that I don't feel like gets used as often as it should. Like I definitely saw a nice good chunk of it in Hatchet too, but he nails those sinister off the book kind of roles because like I said like the House of the Devil definitely was a great performance by him and then what I mentioned before You're Next God he was good in that one too.
Yeah, so Was it? So yeah, his stuff went from like he acted in The Signal. Oh man, poor AJ. He worked in Creepshow 3. Oof. Rough. I think they did Creepshow 3 and 4 or something back to back, if I'm correct. And those were just shot. Those were just terrible. I don't know if you remember them or not, but like I don't know how, but I think somehow or another the rights were up or something, and the people are able to get it for like either cheap or not you have to pay for rights. So it was terrible, you know.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And then he did The Signal, which I've heard really good things about and haven't seen that, but the guys who made that did a bunch of stuff like Southbound and The Ritual and things like that. So then
I like those.
what?
Oh, I actually enjoyed the Ritual. That was the third one from the Tales from the Crypt of full-length movies series, correct?
Which one, Creepshow 3 or?
No, you said a Ritual.
Oh no, I meant the Signal was the movie.
I'm sorry, my bad.
The things that the guys did after that was the South of the Ritual. Yes, the Ritual was it was based on a novel by Adam Neville and starred like Rafe Spall, and I don't think it's the same one
It's not like the
you're
one
thinking of.
hurrying and stuff.
Yeah, and then they also did a movie called The Night House that's on HBO Max. So yeah, these guys, a lot of these might come on Horror Film Lovers because these are films that like, bigger kind of bigger things. Then he did House of the Devil, he did Hatchet 2. He did A Horrible Way to Die. You're Next, Chillerama. Chillerama was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I bet he, well, did he act in the which one? He acted in one called Zombie Movie. I don't know if that was the one Joe Lynch did or whatnot. But see, that's the thing. A lot of them just kept kind of recycling each other. Joe Lynch is another one who came up at the same time as those guys, and they all work together, or all just friends and hang out and shit. And I think that is our Quentin Tarantino of our generation right now. Those are the people there. And then soon after, we'll have a whole new group of Gen Z or whatever filmmakers out there that all get together because they all become, sort of famous. But those are our horror versions, right? So I think that's pretty neat.
Absolutely.
I love AJ Bowen. I want to see more stuff with him.
I agree completely. I'm a fan of him.
Yeah, so and I'm sure when he popped up, you're like, oh my God.
Oh yeah, no, I got really excited. Like I said, I'm a big fan of his work and stuff. Matter of fact, when we filmed Go Away, we had LC Holt on set, and I kind of felt bad. It's like I did ask LC about that, but I think I was asking more questions about AJ Bowen than I was about his experience on set.
Oh, I'm sure Elsie was okay with that.
Oh yeah, no, he was so great, super nice guy. And anyone else who's a filmmaker who's out there, if they ever consider wanting to hire LC, I'll tell you right now, he's a great guy, very professional, very friendly, very warm, and
Very
really.
s sweet guy. I met him at Tidewater HorrorCon in
Oh.
Virginia, and he was chatting with me, and I just kept gushing about the fact that I want to see Pop Skull that he's in. I want to see that so bad. And he told me, because I was like, you can find it on eBay for like $100 or something, but I don't know if I want to. He's like, don't waste your money buying those, like that, because he said that they're gonna create they're gonna come they're working on at some point putting out a Blu-ray of it. It's taking forever, I guess. I don't know what the deal is or whatnot, but they are working on it. So there you go, people. I've been told, so hopefully that'll happen. Pop Skull is Adam Wingard's like either second or third film. He had done a movie called Homesick that I love to death. I reviewed it already, but I'm gonna probably review it for Indie Film Cafe either this year this season next, because it's so good. It is Bill Moseley kills in that movie. Tiffany Shepis is wonderful. I mean, Jeff Dylan Graham, who I love, just absolutely like bonkers. Great. I love those guys. So if you ever get a chance to see that movie, I totally recommend it. It's Adam Wingard's I think first big movie that he did when he was down in Full Sail. They were just down in Full Sail, and they're like, "Well, we're doing film stuff. Let's go make a fucking movie." So, you know, and that's the attitude, man. That's the attitude. I think Ty West feels like that, you know, like let's just go fucking make a movie, and you know, and that's what this movie even feels that way. It's very well directed, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it feels like people that got together are like, let's go make a fucking awesome movie, you know. Yeah, so there's that, and there's Tom Noonan in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, he was Frankenstein from Monster Squad,
Right.
and
Yep.
he was a spider wrangler.
So he was also freaking in, if I'm correct, if I'm right, I'm gonna look this up, make sure. But I believe he was in Last Action Hero
Yes, he was
as,
actually. He was the mad axe killer.
yeah. If I'm correct, yeah, he was the,
I
hold
believe
on.
that movie gets the love it really deserves. I thought that was a very fun, well-made movie, to be honest.
He's called Ripper in that, and
Oh,
he also
yeah.
played himself, because there was a funny, like, when they're outside of they're back in the real world, and they're going to that like premiere or whatever of Jack Slater 5 or whatever it was, you know, they were all the actors from the movies were there, so he saw that guy wanted to kill him, and he's like, no, that's not. Or whatever, I want to go after him. No, that's the actor, you know. Like, I remember that. And he was like being interviewed or whatever as himself, but and then he sees like the other Ripper walk by. He was like, oh wow, my stunt double is like here, whatever, is walking around. Just love that. Like, I just love people have sense of humor about themselves, have fun with making movies and whatnot. And he did a fantastic job. He was also in RoboCop 2.
That's right.
Oh my God, he was in Collision Course. Do you remember
Yes,
that movie with
I
Jay Leno? Dude,
do.
you're like probably one of the only people I know who actually have heard of that movie that I'm friends with. Like Jay Leno and Pat Morita.
Yeah.
Miyagi and Jay Leno together. Oh God, I gotta do that for Hollywood Knockbusters at some point. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it was all about that hot craze of trying to get those fun mashups together because, like, you had oh God, I just had it on the tip of my mind here just a second ago, and it just went away.
Wasn't Rush Hour, was it?
No, actually, I was gonna say actually 48 Hours with
48
Nick
Hours, yes.
Murphy, and then of
Yeah.
course you had like Tango and Cash with Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell and stuff. I mean.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, and that was sort of the mashup of like people that shouldn't be working together, being partners, you know, kind of
It
thing.
always fell under the radar that I didn't think got not that didn't get enough love. And I have a funny feeling you watched this one before too.
Years ago. Which one?
Harley Davidson and the Marlboro and the Marlboro Man.
Yes. So that used to pop up on TV all the time. I don't think I watched the whole thing of it, but I used to watch it when it was on TV or whatever. And back in the day when TV used to be fun, you know, like now we got all the streaming stuff, so you just gotta it was more fun when you were scrolling down and you had to choose like a movie that was already on TV right now, you know, and stuff. And then you were like, oh, what is this? I'll check this out. And nowadays, it's like, even if you do the live stuff on like some of the streaming sites, you know, there's a like, I don't want to say Plex, I don't know if Plex does it, but Pluto TV. Do you know Pluto TV?
Oh, yeah.
But you know they have their live section, right? Where they have like things, they have categories, and they'll be like, you know, this movie or this stuff or whatever. But it's, you know. So anyway, Like it would be a whole Degrassi channel or something. I have nothing but Degrassi, the Next Generation on there and stuff, and you can watch that or whatever. So, that's fun, I guess, but it doesn't feel the same as when it used to be on TV, on cable TV, before satellite became a big thing, before you had all this stuff. You didn't have like 800 channels to choose from. You had like 20, maybe, if you were lucky, And now I think the biggest problem with this world right now, and this is completely different than House of the Devil, sorry, but I feel like we're so spoiled. Do you ever feel that way?
Oh yeah, I mean it's amazing with what we were willing to accept back in the day because it's all we had and everything. It's kind of like, oh well, we didn't have cell phones. If you want to talk to one of your friends, you know what we did? We got on our bikes and we biked over to our friend's house to go say hi to them or see if they were even home even. Sometimes they weren't even home, and guess what that meant? It meant either A, you bike to a different friend's house and hope they were home, or you turned right back around and you biked home. And stuff. And now, even and unfortunately, nowadays, even when people know that they're home, they can live a few houses down from each other. They're more inclined just to get on there and hit them up on Messenger or something than they are just to go over and say hi. And that I think is one of the few things, one of the drawbacks I would say with modern day technology. I mean, it's got a lot of pros, do not get me wrong,
No, no.
the cons, but I do feel like that it has taken away from that core value of getting out there in the real world and experiencing life firsthand and meeting those people instead of just talking to them on the phone.
Mark Zuckerberg doesn't want us to do that anymore. He wants us to go into the metaverse, and he
Yeah.
wants us to like he I saw this video where it was literally Mark Zuckerberg telling people, like showing people how, with the little headsets and everything, you can go play poker with your friends, but it's not your friends. I mean, it could be your friends from anywhere. It could be your friends right down the street, but it could be your friends from like California. It could be your friends from Japan. It doesn't matter. They just have to go in the same room and they can play poker with you and stuff. And you can actually literally play poker with your friends like that. But I'm like, I mean, I understand that it's tough to say, hey, buddy from Japan, come hang out with me like tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I get that. But I'm like, but it feels like they want us to do this every day, all the time. Like, they want us to be in this metaverse instead of the real world, you know? Can you imagine if you're walking around the world one day and like people aren't actually just walking down the street? They're just on a headset the whole time, just walking places, or whatever, or nobody will leave there. The only people that leave their house, somebody said that it was going to get to a point where it was going to get to a point where AI, like, some kind of robot will come bring us pizzas, right? Or bring us food. And I'm like, well, who's going to pay for them? And it was like, oh, it's okay. The robots will be doing this for free for us and stuff like that, and we don't have to do anything. I'm like, well, how will we know? How can we stay in a house, right? We have to pay the rent there, you know what I mean? Like, this is just gonna get so ridiculous. I don't know how this is gonna work, but this in 50 years or so, when I'm probably still not alive, I'm not alive by then or something, it's gonna get to where it's just like too crazy. I'm not gonna want to live in this world anymore. I'll be like, get me out. This is just, I can't handle. Like, I miss being able to go. I think what got me to be a good writer was the fact that that I was able to play and have an imagination. And I feel like we're gonna lose that. What do you think about that?
Oh, I actually completely agree across the board. I mean, it's like we used to have things back in the day that really forced us to use our imagination. Like a big example was, we used to be really into our generations were really into like board games and stuff. Most of those board games involved imagination along with those board games. Nowadays, people just pull out their phone and most, I mean, don't get me wrong, the mobile app games can be kind of fun, but let's face it, most of it's just click, 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 click.
Exactly.
There's not much substance to it, or anything like that. I mean, so I find that to be kind of a little like, like almost kind of like factory line escape kind of mentality, where it's just rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I mean, versus game doing like say like a game of like Clue together with your friends and stuff, and having to try to figure out who the murder mystery is, which one of your friends is actually the murderer, which one's not. You actually have to use your mind to think about, things that have transpired in this game up to that point that can rule things out or rule people in as possible suspects. It's just that key factor just doesn't seem to be there much nowadays. I just don't see as much in the entertainment realm, even for kids nowadays. Most of the stuff just seems more like electronic based now and involves little imagination and stuff. Even when it comes to like reading books nowadays, audiobooks are starting to take over in a big way now, where people just want to pop in and listen to it instead of just stopping, reading the words, and having that own mind, and letting your imagination go with the words while you're reading them and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe some people can do it the same while hearing someone else read it, but I don't know. For me, I guess it's just that kind of like cross brand of a blend of like using the imagination, using your audio vision and stuff like that, just to put yourself in that place. I just feel like it's more what's the word I'm looking for? It's just more engulfing in the whole moment.
I agree 100%. Like I absolutely agree. And I think we're, go back to this movie though. And this does, and I will segue really good because it, because I, what I enjoyed about this movie was seeing like the stuff like the headset the girl was wearing and all the details to the 80s, because that is exactly like, this is the stuff like people would, kids today would watch this movie and go, what's a payphone? You had to put quarters into the to a phone. Like, what is that thing? And everything. Because we don't have payphones anymore. Because people just expect that they'll have, which is ridiculous. We should still have payphones. Because some people might not be able to get their cell phone or cell phone break. How are they going to call somebody,
Bad
at night?
reception. I mean, at least a payphone is a hard line then.
Right. And so there's that, and there's the headphones. Nobody, people have iPods now. People don't have, pretty soon they'll just have it all in their brain and they can just click something in their brain and it just, then it just plays the song they want to play. They could turn up their, with their, whatever, like Frankenstein and shit. I don't know. It's just gonna get shit. It's gonna get weird. And, but this was very much a big throwback to that time period, which was a simpler time, I mean, she was just there for a, ba a simple babysitting job, and she was so sweet, so nice, and I felt so bad for her the whole time. Like, I'm like, oh God, this is not gonna go well. Do not go, to this babysitter. And it was her friend's fault. It's all her friend's fault. She took the names down, the numbers, took away the thing, so nobody else got to call, and she got screwed, so our friend got screwed. So yeah, it was nuts. And then but I was just like, I enjoyed the throwback and the feel and everything. And I feel like we're sort of in that right now time period where we like nostalgia a lot more. A lot of us are sort of getting scared of the world we sort of live in right now, where we want to kind of go to a simpler time, the 80s, the 70s, the 90s, before things like before the 2000s, were mainly 2010s, like right after this movie, things went just like, things have just been going, Facebook took off, and the world is so different, now.
Oh, it is. It most certainly is. I mean, it used just to be the internet was just a place just to get some quick information on things.
Or
And
porn.
yeah, oh yeah, yep, yeah. Or porn.
Well, I mean, porn has been, not gonna lie, porn has been sort of innovative since the beginning of porn. So they've been trying to implement it everywhere. So, there wasn't, now there's OnlyFans, and then soon there'll be something else and something else, and then porn will try to get its way into that thing too, which, I mean, more power to you,
Hey, if you can make a fair buck on it, then
No, no sex shaming
yeah,
here.
exactly. More power to you at that point. If you're comfortable with yourself and you're happy doing it, and no one's getting hurt, then hey, I say move on and God bless.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, so Tom Noon, and we forgot to mention Mary Warrenoff in the movie. Do you know
God.
who, do you remember what she's from? Like, do you remember seeing her from stuff?
Oh, I do. When I first saw her, I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know her. And I looked her up, and yep, sure enough, a movie I loved watching as a kid, she was in Rock and Roll High School.
Rock and Roll High School, which is actually coming to the Norva in Norfolk next month, I think, April.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm gonna go see that in the theater because, like, I just saw Clerks in the theater on the last Friday of this month. We're seeing Pulp Fiction in the theater, which is, exciting, because I've never seen it in theater actually. It's too young when it came out, to watch it in the theater. And then we're gonna see Empire Records and Rock and Roll High School. What?
I was just saying, Empire Records. That's a good one too. I really enjoyed that one. That was a fun movie.
So there's I mean, to me, see, once again, it's nostalgia. Like, the throwback movies are gonna, like, even though we've seen them a billion times, a lot of these movies I haven't seen in the theater, and I'm like, and I can't wait to see it. And when we watched Clerks, there was a young crowd. We just saw The Room, the Tommy Wiseau The Room movie, the one that the Disaster Artist was based off of and stuff. And with the, one of the lead actors, Greg Sestero was there, and there were like so many people that hadn't seen the movie, and they were just excited to be there and stuff. I actually kind of wish I saw House of the Devil on the big screen. I
Yeah,
mean,
me too.
it had this like look to it, cinematic look to it that would have drove me nuts seeing it on like a film, not even digital, like seeing it on film. I bet Ty West and them enjoyed the hell out of that,
Oh yeah, well, and just like how much more engulfed you would have been like on all the like it's like that movie had a lot of really good intense moments in it. Like being in the theater, with that killer surround sound systems that most theaters usually carry, and just on the bigger screen, really putting you more in the environment. Yeah, I would love to go see that in the theater myself personally.
Yeah, it would have been amazing. Yeah, sadly, 2009. I don't know if it even had a big, I don't know if it was just limited, screening, or if it had a huge wide theatrical. I don't think it did. And which kind of blows because, like, you look at a movie like this and you kind of know, like, this kind of deserves,
Oh God, yeah. I mean, that is definitely a worldwide theatrical run. Absolutely. I mean, I would have paid to go see that one in the theater in a heartbeat.
Me too.
I don't think it did though. But I mean, even some of the ones I love a lot, like actually my talk to you before about my Hatchet movies. I usually had to go afar. I think the closest one that ever showed the Hatchet movies or the Piranha movies, the newer ones, was up at the State Theater in Alexandria,
Oh, wow.
which is like a good hour and a half drive for me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I made the trek because I wanted to see those movies.
Right, so you would do it, but it was a trek. Another one I hope to do at some point. It's not really, I don't know if it can be considered a horror because we already did, last season we did Frozen, which,
A good one too. I enjoyed
right.
that.
And another one I want to do that I just don't know if it's considered horror, it's more thriller, I guess, but it's so good and it's so. It is kind of scary at times, which is Spiral, not the Jigsaw Spiral, Saw Spiral,
Yeah,
movie.
I know which one you meant.
I kind of joke about Adam Green as like he comes up with great titles that people steal from him, like Frozen. You know, years later, Disney stole the title Frozen, then Spiral, years later, Saul steals Spiral from him. You know, he's a trendsetter, you know. I don't think he gets that credit enough, you know.
Disney's new animated made movie coming this summer. A boy was stranded in the woods to live on his own and to turn himself into a man. The movie is called Hatchet.
Disney's Hatchet.
Disney's.
Hatchet, actually, I remember there was a book that I read as a kid called Hatchet. And when I first heard the title Hatchet, I thought, oh man, are they redoing it? Because they did Hatchet years ago as A Cry in the Wild. And we reviewed on Indie Film Cafe, my buddy Dustin Hubbard. And I don't know if you know Dustin or not. He's out there doing some stuff. And then my buddy John Ward, we all reviewed was it Cry in the Wild, White Wolves of Cry in the Wild 2, which was the sequel to it, but the first one was called Hatchet. I mean, the first one was called Cry in the Wild, but the original book was called Hatchet. It was by Gary Polson. It was literally about a boy who's stuck in the middle of the woods, and he kind of has to deal with bears and other things because his plane crashed, you know, and stuff. And he's trying to figure out how to get, you know, to safety or whatever. And there's bears and there's a white wolf that helps, you know, save him, you know, or whatever. So it's an interesting book, but it was more fun than I got to watch the movies in class, you know, like they showed us A Cry in the Wild and that same year is when Cry in the Wild 2 came out. It was like a new release. So there, my teacher was like, yeah, let's watch that too. And I was like, sure. And it had Zach Morris in it. It had, you know, the little kid that played Tom Hanks as a kid in Big. It had one of the girls from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So it was pretty cool. You know, it's a cool little, flick. And so it's been sort of like I loved it. Like I enjoyed it as a kid. I enjoy it as an adult, you know, I think because of the nostalgia. Produced by Roger Corman's wife, Julie
Oh, really?
Corman. Yeah. So weird. I always said if I were able to remake anything from Corman's, you know, body of work, that would be what I would remake, or whatever, do a sequel to. Another White Wolf, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you said you had a lot of stuff that you wanted to discuss on this movie. What were specific things that you would love to talk about?
Oh well, I mean, we already tapped into some of it. Oh, like I said, one of the big things, like I said in the beginning, was like how well they made you feel like that this movie was made in the 80s. Like I said, if you did not look this movie up prior and you just go in watching it, you would definitely think, oh, this isn't one of those 80s movies. I probably just missed it in a bunch because there are a lot of ones that fell under the radar that you just happen to stumble on later on in life and stuff that you're like, wow, how did I miss this? This is a good film.
It does give you the copyright date, and I don't know if that's what that is. Like it says MMVIII. What? So that's 2009 or 2008. It's 2008, right?
I could swear I look on IMDb. They
Well,
said
no,
two
it's
thousand.
2009, but I bet they finished it in 2008 and it just came out in 2009.
Yeah,
But yeah, no, it says 2000. I'm guessing that's 2008 because look at it, it's MMVII. What? All right, I'm looking that up. M, what's M? Is M like the millennium or something? MMVIII. Roman numerals. 2008. Yeah. So they, but it gave you that, it gave you it like already. It didn't say 1983. Didn't say, you know, another thing. And let you know if you were if you were just, you know, looking that up and you're like, hey, wait, let me see what year that is, you know. That's kind of cool though.
Oh yeah, no. But like, and their casting in this was spot on. That's the only word I can use for it. There really was not a single character in this whole film that I felt like was out of place or like, eh, you could have probably gotten someone that could have maybe turned that film up to a different notch. I did not see a single character in that would make me say that everyone hit the marks perfectly. Even the more side characters, like the main girl's roommate at college and stuff, she was like, I wasn't sure what to expect, what I was going to get with her, because it was completely different. I was thinking this complete, utter, just really mean girl. I was half right on her. She's probably someone who ends up being very promiscuous and generally always wants her friend out of there, which is why she probably wants to find a place. And that part was definitely like, in there. But as far as her like just being absolutely mean, it wasn't really like she was being mean to her as m so much as she just didn't care and she just wasn't like a reliable roommate or friend to even do the most simplest things like, hey, take a message for me. Oh, where'd you put it? You don't even know where you put my message? Like, oh, and I think the response was like, I think it's somewhere over there near the phone, and like there's all these piles of paper. It's like, wow.
Yeah, like she wanted credit for at least doing it, not the fact that she couldn't even find it, or whatever. You know who that is, right? You know who that actress is, right?
Oh no, who?
That's Greta Gerwig, who is very famous as the director of Lady Bird, for
Oh.
A24. So she directed Lady Bird and wrote, I believe. She's done amazing work and you know who did the voice of the 911 operator?
Oh, who was that? 'Cause, I mean, it wasn't a Bolin.
No, what is it? Lena Dunham. I'm sure you heard that name before.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where we're from. Like, I know the name. I'm drawing a blank on what she was in.
So, Greta Gerwig. To give you an example of that, she acted in a bunch of stuff. Usually, I think like independent films. Like she did a movie. She was in a movie called Baghead, that was very famous for as the Duplass brothers, who Mark and Jay Duplass, who did like Creep and Biosphere. They did they executive produced like a bunch of different movies too. But then she acted in a bunch of indie stuff, and then she ended up directing let's see, she directed Lady Bird. Have you seen Lady Bird, by the way?
I have not.
And she just directed the Little Women remake or adaptation. She did that. She's directing Barbie right now.
Yeah.
It's good for her, man. Like she's doing what she wants to do, like she wants to direct Barbie, go right ahead. I mean, a lot of girls grew up like with Barbie, or whatever.
Honestly, from all the still shots they showed of Barbie, I won't lie, it's not one I'm going to pay to go see in the theater. But I gotta admit though too, it's definitely one of those films that when it shows up on one of my streaming sites, I'm probably going to check it out.
Well, your wife's not going to make you go see it with her.
Actually, funny enough, my wife was actually I think maybe she's the doctor her coming out, but she was more like because she's a veterinarian, she was more about playing like operation and stuff like that.
Oh, right. It's
If
kind
she had, she probably operated on it.
of. Could they make that into a movie? Could they like adapt that into a film, Operation? I mean,
Horror movie.
that sounds like a horror movie. Like somebody's whose insides, and then you have to operate it or you get literally shot to death. Yes. Milton Bradley or Parker Brothers or whoever owns that, give us that right. We'll make a horror film out of that. You gotta go in there and the surgeon who hasn't been doing great. Has been like having issues with his hands and stuff, has to do it, and he has to make himself calm down so he can You go in there and operate on somebody, and if he, shocks them, he dies, or whatever. I don't know. It's
It
funny.
would be a great time for that too, because I mean, right now, I don't know what's going on lately, but it just feels like there's a new trend going where like they just want to take all your childhood memories and turn them into dark horror stories. I mean, like Pooh, Blood and the Honey, and then
Well,
an apple.
that was made by some guys in the UK, and it was because like Winnie the Pooh was, is actually public domain, I guess now, or whatever.
All of them are, except for whatever reason, Tigger, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Tigger's the only one that is still protected,
Oh, okay.
show up in the movie.
Oh, so he doesn't show up in the movie at all? I didn't see it, and I'm not gonna go see it in the theaters because it'll eventually end up on Tubi like all the rest of those movies do. So
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, because the guys who made it, they made this movie. Let me see if I can grab it. It's right here. It is. I found this at the store.
Oh, which one is that?
Can you
Oh,
see what
sorry.
is it?
I can't read the writing on it. Oh, Jack and Jill.
Jack
Okay.
and Jill, man. So Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water and then kill people, I guess. I don't know. It's
Came
like
down with a bucket of guts.
they came down with blood and guts and shit. I don't know. It's funny. So, yeah, I mean, that's what they, that's what they do is they take those guys in the UK are taking well-loved stuff, childhood memories and just making them into horror films,
Actually, funny note, it's so funny you mentioned that too. I actually have a buddy, like he does a little bit of independent filmmaking out in England himself, and he actually told me something that like he's actually very, very dead serious about. And I was like, all right, I think I might want to check this out. But apparently, there is a filmmaker over there who is working currently on making a horror rendition of Little Miss Muffet in the vein of a spider invasion.
Nice. I'd watch that. It's probably the same guys, honestly.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I wouldn't surprise me either. Just because. Sorry, I had to let my dog out. I don't
Oh
like
no.
the room.
Those I don't mind. Give me a quick second. I'm going to get a glass of water real fast.
Yeah, one second. While he's doing that, I want to let you guys know some cool stuff that's happening. Horror film lovers will be back as a monthly series. We're gonna go all the way to December, and we're gonna have lots and lots of really upcoming cool, stuff for you guys to check out. Lots of independent, well, not independent, but actually bigger name movies that are gonna be on Horror Film Lovers. Also, we still got 90s horror films and 80s horror films and whatnot that are coming out too. So there you go. All right, what is that? That's not water.
Well, it was water, but I used those flavor squirts. It's a passion fruit crystal
Passion fruit water. Okay.
light.
I had two glasses of Coke up here, so I just went through both. I'm going through both of them already.
Guess they all go for a film for a film set. Like I only drink coffee and like tea and water. Because I don't, if I don't drink Coke very often, when I do have it, it really gives me a big caffeine jolt. So I'm like, I'm saving this for film set days.
It's funny because I don't do coffee. It upsets my stomach sometimes, so I don't do it on sets or whatever. Just don't want to have the, but it's weird. My stomach, it doesn't really get upset when I'm directing, which I would have thought it would because I'm generally stressed out, on a film set. It's funny. Some people are like, I hate being on set. Like, on set's my le least favorite thing in the world. I love pre-production. I love post-production, but I don't love being on set. And I'm like, how could you hate being on set? Like, it's the reason I do this. It's also probably actor in me because even if I'm not directing or acting, or I'm, even if I'm not acting, being a director on set, I feel the most comfortable on set, and everything. But yeah, so I drink, yeah, I'll drink like I think I generally ask for cherry coke, or whatever when I do it, or usually I'm the one paying for it, coming out of the budget or whatever. So I'll pick up like cans of cherry coke or whatnot for me particularly, and then if other people want some, they can have some. But I'm like, you better save me like a couple, or I'm gonna be in a grouchy mood. You're not gonna want to be around me if I don't have I have cherry coke and I have gushers, and those are my two things that I have to request on set. So if I ever get big enough where I have my own trailer and everything like that, those are the things I'm going to be asking. Cherry coke in the fridge and lots of gushers and fruit snacks and things, because those just help me, stay alert and whatnot. Just eating gushers. Don't ask me why, but something. Do you like anything specific?
Definitely Diet Pepsi. I'm that kind of guy that I always bring a lot of Diet Pepsi. I won't bring a lot in for the cast members because I guess maybe sometimes I can be a little greedy, but the funny thing is all the cast members know me already very well, and they know I always keep them. I keep a secret pack in my car, and I keep my car unlocked too
Don't do it.
because
You gotta lock that car up now, especially now that they know.
oh yeah. But they were all happy at least, so that was something.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how that is. So let's talk about the ending of this movie. So that's kind of how we'll end the show.
Yeah.
But so last like the first hour and because it's an hour and 35 minutes, so an hour and 15 minutes or something, or whatever. It is sort of a slow build up to what's going to happen, and about the 20-minute mark, I timed it. So about the 20-minute mark was when shit just went crazy, where she's hiding and like those things are the people are coming after her and she doesn't know what's going on. And she gets knocked out and kind of put into like the pentagram and everything. So, and was
Pretty
that
much impregnated.
how the fuck did that happen so quick? Like, that's the only
Yeah.
thing I cannot really. I'm like, I guess if you're impregnated by the devil, then
That is all. Maybe, because it's him, it's supernatural, maybe that cycle speeds up faster.
maybe because, yeah, it was pretty quick that she gets knocked out and put in the hospital, and then the nurse says, you and you, or whatever. And you're like, oh shit. It's Rosemary's Baby. It's that kind of thing of like the devil's child, and shit. And I like that. Like I like I like seeing that. But and then the one thing that really pissed me off, one thing that got me so mad at one point was AJ Bowen had the gun and then she stabs him. Like she slits his throat or whatever, and he's like, and dies. And then she runs away and doesn't grab the gun. So I'm like, oh God, you're letting Mary Warrenoff grab the gun. Nope, Mary Warrenoff doesn't even grab the gun. I'm like, why? These people are going to come after you. Shoot them, And I mean, I get it for story wise, but little
Well,
things like that just drive me nuts.
I know. I mean, like, I always try to turn my brain off on those moments. I just kind of try and put myself in the mentality that I was like, well, they're really scared. Like, they're probably not thinking straight. They're probably working more on instinct than they are on using, common
Fight or
sense.
flight kind of thing. And at that point, she was flighting. She was running away as quickly as she could. She wasn't thinking about, she had the knife in her hand still, but she wasn't thinking about grabbing the thing. No, I get it. It's just like things like that. I'm just like, pick up the fucking knife, do it, kill this bitch, which was fun. Like when I really like a character so much, it's just like Your Next, which we did last year. And stuff, but you've seen Your Next, right? You mentioned that
Oh yeah.
before. So in Your Next, the whole time you're rooting for Sherry Vincent to like kick everybody's ass. You want her to just kill every single person here. You're like, every single person is a douchebag, even her boyfriend, which I believe was not AJ Bowen as her boyfriend. Yeah. So, like, everybody, she wanted, she, I was like, kill every single motherfucker in here because they're all douchebags, and none of them deserve to live. If they're coming after you like that, and so this cult group, Tom Noonan, Mayor Warnov, and I guess was that their, that was their son, because they do mention they have an adult son, right? And so that was this, which, okay, I get it, you need money, you're that desperate, whatever. Somebody can bring you to be a babysitter, then tells you, "We don't really have a baby. You gotta look after my our mom, or whatever." You say, "Might have changed my mind. I'm thinking this is weird. I don't like this." Or say, "Look, my friend is gonna stay here with me because I really don't feel comfortable. She won't take any money like they planned, but like." Why did she send her friend away? Why? Don't do that. Like, her friend got pissed too. It was like, roommate was
Or brother,
like,
I'm staying. You're stupid for staying. It sucks.
right. You're stupid. Like, she lied. They lied to you. They said it was a babysitter. Now it's a, I guess, a grandma sitting job or whatever. Go leave at that moment. There was no grandma, we find out. There was no.
There was one really cool thing they did in that I remember now too in the beginning that really kind of threw me and my wife off when we split that house and when the mother thing came up, I was already thinking of like my wife and I were both thinking, all right, this is one of two things now, either one, like this is like some kind of type of a creature film where like she's actually gonna be babysitting a creature or something, but that doesn't even know it, or it's gonna be something tied into a cult.
Yeah.
It was the latter.
Which I'm glad you didn't know anything going in. I did know that there was a cult. It was called the House of the Devil. So I had done a little bit of like looking it up and everything. So I knew it was an occult, kind of thing. It was a cult kind of thing. But I didn't know much other than that. I didn't know where it was gonna go. And the whole movie, the whole time, you're just like one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie was her just dancing to herself, enjoying herself, listening to the music, and then she knocks over the vase or whatever, and she's like, shit, but like that just felt so real, so cool, so like so much fun and everything. And then, by the way, did you know Ty West was in Your Next as well?
Oh, well, was he one of the actors in that?
Yes, he was. He was the he was the Hollywood director boyfriend or whatever guy. He gets killed fairly early, spoiler alert, sorry, because it doesn't really matter, he's, the character is not that big of a character, but he's in it. Yeah, so I should have warned everybody, spoiler, before I said that. But if you haven't seen Your Next, I don't know what you're, I don't know what you're thinking.
The funny thing is, I actually watched it. I want to say it was like 2 weeks before we started filming Go Away, because we were gonna have him. I was like, well, again, I'm usually the guy. A lot of times, I'll go pick up all the celebrities at the airport. I'll take them to their to
You're
the
the
room,
driver.
exactly. And I'll take them to and from set, and I also will pick them up anything they need. If they need any snacks or provisions, I'll go out and I'll make it happen for them. I want to make their stay as comfortable as possible, but also I like to have something to talk to about, because I'm that kind of taxi driver kind of driver where like I like a conversation, and if you're in my car, we are talking.
That's the same thing with me. I had to pick up John Altamura, who was like the Toxic Avenger, like the second Toxie ever, or whatever. And I was just chatting with John the whole time, and he was telling me about working on Toxic Avenger and the other projects he was doing, all this shit. And I was just like, because it's almost like being, podcasted. It's like almost like interviewing the guy, like, you did this? Oh, that's really cool. I was like working with Lloyd. Oh, Lloyd's like this, blah, 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 blah. And then you just, I'm not going to say anything you said because fortunately, dude's also not with us anymore, sadly. That's kind of a bad thing. And I'm sad to say that. But it was cool, getting a chance to meet him and having a chance to chat with him and stuff like that. Matt Burns hooked that up because I didn't have a table at one of his conventions and stuff. So he to get the ta to earn the table, I had to pick up a couple of the celebrities and stuff at the at the airport or the train station or whatever, and stuff. It's just neat,
I absolutely know. I've said that's the great thing about this horror community. We're all friends here and we all help each other out because, it's just like how you just mentioned Matt Burns. I know Matt Burns very well, too. I've worked on quite a few of his projects. Matt's been a big reason as to a lot of the films I've been able to get into. It's
Were
Matt's
you in
provided.
the only ones with Jordan?
I was not in the only ones, but I am in his KOA Killed on Arrival movie
Oh, awesome. Yeah,
and
neat.
also doing his Rosie Killer Doll movie. And I'm also in the horror short Head on a Writer's Block.
Nice. Nice. They've been busy going out and making, a bunch of shit. So really happy about them. Proud of what they're doing, out there. But yeah, it's just insane, this horror community. Once again, to go back to Ty West though, like their community, people like Mike Flanagan worked with the, worked on Dr. Sleep, or whatever, with the girl from House of the Devil, like it's just like it all kind of they all work together and they all work with a lot of the same people because they probably enjoyed, they probably maybe, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure Mike Flanagan has seen this movie and was like, those people are really good, let me cast that person, you know what I mean? So I don't know if AJ Bowen's been in a Mike Flanagan movie, but he should. AJ Bowen, if you're listening right now, go find Mike Flanagan somewhere. Go up to him and say, "Hey, I should, to make this circle complete, I need to be in your movie too."
I was going to say, if you are watching, please come do one of my movies.
AJ, we would love to work with you too. But I guarantee you, he's costly these days in a way. Like, I mean, I bet because if not, he should be, because he's worked his butt off in this industry. There's a few people that I just am in awe of these days, and the fact that a lot of them are so humble and so sweet about the movies that they do, that's just to me amazing. I remember I interviewed Adam Green before he was Adam Green. He had done Hatchet, and that was he had done Hatchet and Spiral, and that was it at that time, and I was very lucky. I don't even know how it happened. I think it was MySpace or something, and I got to interview him, and the problem was I hadn't seen either of those movies, so I was just kind of talking about, what was it like working on these movies that I don't know anything about, or whatever, because I think they might have just came out, but they didn't come out near me, and stuff. So, but now if I were to interview him, I'd know way too much information, and stuff, and he'd be like, "Dude, you're kind of creeping me out, I didn't know you knew my social security number." That kind of thing. So, I don't, Adam, I don't know your social security number, don't worry. Looking at these movies, I study these things because this is the kind of shit I want to do someday, not necessarily like House of the Devil, exactly, but I want to make something that like stands out like this stuff, and eventually I will, but right now I'm just happy to watch these movies and enjoy them and kind of see the thing. And I do plan to buy the Blu-ray at some point of House of the Devil, because I bet it has like some kind of commentary or something. I guarantee you it looks more beautiful than what we saw on Tubi, you know.
Oh, no, it's definitely making my physical copy list. I'm a very big guru on owning the physical copies. There's nothing wrong with streaming. Streaming's great. Streaming's convenient, but I think the there is actually this one actor. He's more on the NDC, but he's kind of into some bigger roles before. You've probably heard of him too, Christopher Enlow.
Yeah, I know Chris. I've worked with him. Yeah.
Christopher one time put up this post about physical media that made so much sense, and I really felt like and hope that it resonates to others who see that message, which is that physical media is the only purest way you're ever going to really see the director's full vision of his film. Because once it goes to the streaming sites, and this is true because with what we've dealt with in distribution in our movies, we've gone through the same things. There are things in your movie that certain streaming sites don't want on there. They have the right to cut it out.
Oh, like
So when
nudity or sex or,
exactly, or
you
just
know.
seems that they felt like it doesn't need to be there. We can cut your running time down even more.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, I hope, yeah, we have, or I have Bloody Summer Camp, and I have, all these different movies out there, that are, that are available to stream, but, but they are they're better on Blu-ray, and I got my copy from you guys, directly, you know what I mean? Like, I love
I
that shit,
remember that
and you signed it too. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
it was at Scares.
scares I care. Yeah, see, that's the thing, like, because when you get a copy from the director and they sign it, and you go back and you're like, oh my God, like, this movie was amazing, or even if it's crap, you're like, oh my God, this movie is terrible, yay, like, because I
In
celebrate bad
your
movies sometimes. Those are fun too. Sometimes sometimes not so much. But at least, the people are out there making the fucking movie, Dave out there, Dave Kerr out there, shout out to him, going out and making his movies. You're part of a lot of people's productions and helping people out, and so, thank you for that. And then people like Ty West and Adam Green and Adam Wingard and all these people that are just busting their ass, and some of them, like Adam Wingard, got to direct fucking Kong, or whatever, Kong versus Godzilla. And it was awesome to see.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
He did a great job. Like, I was pretty impressed. And then Ty West is doing his X trilogy, or whatever. I'm gonna call it the Triple X trilogy, or whatever.
I like.
Yeah. So he's doing that. And then, Mike Flanagan's out there doing stuff for Netflix. Like, all these people who started out just making, these independent little flicks went and, blew up. And now they're doing amazing things, and it's because they're awesome. They're good directors, and so good for them.
Absolutely.
I think we should celebrate filmmakers more than we should, say, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, there are a few filmmakers I don't really follow, or whatever, but it's just that's an attitude thing, and I feel like people like Ty West and all of them seem to have, Eli Roth, all of them have good attitudes,
Oh, yeah.
like, Eli Roth seems very humble about who he is, he doesn't think he's, as far as I know, he doesn't think he's the shit. Like, every time I ever see him talk, he's just very grateful that he's out there making the movies,
And he loves indie horror movies too. He's shown up in quite a few. One of them I actually have on DVD. It's called The Slaughter.
Nice.
It actually like if you've ever watched Zombie Strippers with Robert Englund, actually all the military personnel in the very beginning of that movie who were the ones who got infected and brought to the strip club, They're actually the entire main cast of that movie, The Slaughter. It's kind of a
Nice.
throwback for them. But Eli Roth, and what made that one funnier is Eli Roth actually came in as his character from Cabin Fever, Grim, and he had his dog Dr. Mambo with him too.
Nice.
It was such a cool little fun throw in there, but you could tell it was an indie horror film. It was one of those more higher indie ones. They probably had about, I'd say, probably like a 200, probably K budget or something to play with.
Still, I mean, I would have thought that's how much a per day Eli Roth would cost, or whatever,
And he just showed up in there, and from what I heard too, I think he did it pretty much for I pretty much I think the director just had to take him out for lunch and just cover his expenses to come out there, but he didn't charge any day rate, which doesn't surprise me a lot. I see a lot of the bigger name actors do that a lot of times.
Because
We
they just and they enjoy the movie, like making the process of the movie, and a lot of them love like being a part of something that could become something big, like they have this trust in these small indie filmmakers, a lot of these indie filmmakers nowadays go off to fucking be in Marvel, much to some people's dismay or whatever, but like the John Watts directed Clown. And Cop Car, I believe, and stuff. And then he went on to do Spider-Man. Best Spider-Mans I've seen since Toby. Sorry. What? Andrew Garfield. Yeah.
But it's so funny you should mention Toby, because who directed the Toby Maguire horror movies? Sam Raimi. Where
Raimi.
did Sam Raimi start off at? The
He
Evil
and
Dead, and show up in cameos in like Intruder and stuff like that. I mean, so once again, they came from humble beginnings into bigger fame. And even with the Raimis, I've gotten to meet Sam Raimi. I haven't met Ted yet.
I met
Our
both Texas Frightmare.
I want to meet both of them. I'm really excited.
Ted, I'm not gonna say any, like I don't say anything bad. But Ted seemed distracted, I guess, when I met him. So he didn't seem very, like he was very nice and very sweet and very humble, but he just wasn't like, very talkative kind of guy. Maybe he isn't. Some people aren't, and everything. They're like kind of like, hey. Give me your money and then let's get this thing and then, get the next view. You know what I mean? But some people like Sam, I was waiting in a huge line like to get my photo op with him. And I'm like, freaking, I get nervous. And I have been in lines with like Robert Englund and, all these other people. And I've never been nervous, right? This time I was like fucking shaking and shit and stuff. And I get there and finally come to see him and I get my picture with him. And the only thing I could muster up is like, that he inspires me as a filmmaker. And he goes, or I said my name, Jonathan, and I said, Jonathan Moody. And I said, you really inspired me as a filmmaker. And he said, thank you. You're so sweet. And then he did the thing and then. That was it. And I was like, I mean, people would be like, why didn't you give him your like card or why didn't you do this? And I'm like, you don't do that at those things, man. That's not how I want him to remember me. I want him to see one of my movies one day and come up to me and go, hey man, let's work together. That's what I want. I don't want him to see my card that he's just gonna throw away, and shit. And like that's not how it works. People think it's that easy that you just give him your card and then he goes, hey, I'm gonna call this guy up today. It does or email this guy. It doesn't work that way, if there's a lot more to it,
Especially on the celebrity, especially if you're trying to get them to be even a part of your films, all depending on who they are, and it will depend. I mean, you got ones like Felissa Rose, for example, that you can actually pretty much work with her directly on working on a deal with her, and it'll happen. But Felissa is also a very great businesswoman too, so I get that. And then you got ones like, say, like Tom Matthews, where you have to go through a talent agency to get him, and you've got to jump a lot of hoops to get him. It was not easy. It took us about a month to lock him in for one of our movies.
I'm surprised how they get like him to do the was the fan films and stuff, because I'm just like in awe of people doing fan films and then having like big name people like Tom as Tommy Jarvis again or something, you know. Just, you know, I think there was one movie that had Tommy Jarvis in it, and it stole my idea, because I had this idea for a Crystal Lake TV series. I was gonna have it star I think it was Matthew Ewald. I don't know if you know his name, and whatnot. It's gonna be Tom he's gonna be Tommy Jarvis, and then I was gonna try and find somebody big to play Tina from Friday 13th, 7, you know,
Oh
and
yeah.
everything. Unfortunately, we
Get Jennifer Banco.
what?
Get Jennifer Banco. That'd be perfect.
I know. Well, so I think there was at one point I was going to try to talk to her about doing it again, and everything. And her and I are actually friends on Facebook, and we chat every once in a while, you know, and everything. But it's not. It's nothing about making movies together yet, you know. I haven't gotten to that point where I'm like, hey, I want to cast you in my movie, because but it would have been probably somebody like Laura Park Lincoln, maybe, you know, kind of thing, if we had. But like, I think they did get Laura Park Lincoln to come back, and I think they did get so they got Tina and Tommy together. I was like, fuck, it stole my idea. But that was like, but I didn't do anything with that idea, because I can't do fan films. Like, I got a cease and desist from from Crystal Lake Entertainment. This was before all the lawsuit, the law, like all the stuff in the courts happening and everything. You know about that, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been following that very closely. As a matter of fact, every once in a while, I've actually had a few email chats with Larry Zinsky, who was a chef.
Zerner,
Yeah.
Larry Zerner, right?
Sorry. Yeah, thank you. From of Shelby from part three, because he's actually a entertainment lawyer, and he knows contracts very well and stuff. And you know, I got to learn a lot from him of what was going on and stuff. And yeah, I mean, the good news is that it's pretty much now cleaned up for the most part. It's kind of funny you mentioned a TV series, because there is one coming to Paramount now. Apparently, they are doing a TV series. It sounds really neat, too.
It's the original, and it's a cool idea that did I so I thought about it like before, like it would be really cool if they explored more of Camp Crystal Lake beef, like his drowning, and you know what Mrs. You know what was her name, Mrs. Voorhees was like before, you know, she snapped, you know, kind of thing, you know, and stuff, and what made her snap and everything. That's what they're gonna do, I believe. I believe that's the big basis for it, is like they're exploring that, and I think that's amazing. I'm trying to see
Oh,
if I follow Larry on yeah, so I'm following Larry on well, yep, okay, so on Twitter. So I need to hit him up sometime again and chat with him. I want to get an interview with him, and like I want to kind of talk to him, you know, about like why you got into being an entertainment lawyer, because you know, like did acting really, like, you know, because acting is tough, man, especially in Hollywood, you know,
oh God,
like, you know,
they're hot.
after
The next,
what.
I was, oh yeah, especially in that industry, you could be hot one moment and not the very next, and then you're done. I mean, so I mean, I actually commend a lot of those who are like, you know, I'm having fun doing it. Hopefully, this takes off and it's a long term thing. But you know what? It may not be. Let's have something in the background, because even like some of your biggest celebrities. A good example is Kevin Van Hendrick from the Basket Case series. He actually has his own stone making business, where he does all the stone statues and stuff like that. He's
Oh, wow.
really talented too. He's got a whole website and everything. Absolutely phenomenal work. My wife and I have, because we have a retaining wall in our front yard, we've been actually wanting to get a stone sculpture that he made to put on our retaining wall. We just gotta save up for it. I mean,
Yeah.
not that his prices are outrageous or anything. They're not. But it's just, if you look it up, stone sculptures in general are just very expensive.
Well, there you go. Hopefully you get that. Was there anything about the ending of this movie that you sort of wanted to make sure we discussed for it?
Let's see here. I mean, I kind of feel like we've always, you know, it's kind of we get off topic, but then we get on topic and we hit some more tidbits that we didn't hit before, and then we go back off topic and we come
Right.
back.
Well, I mean, that's just me in general.
Oh,
So, like, don't.
it did me too, man. We're both good.
Yeah, I like it's hard. My ADHD, it's hard for me to like focus like necessarily on one topic at a time. But so yeah, I think like the ending, I think we did cover most of it. Like we talked about the pregnancy. I mean, we didn't mention that she actually killed herself or whatever, or shot herself. Remember, she shot herself
That was
and
one thing that threw me off a little bit too. I'm glad you brought that up because that looked like a pretty clean shot. I mean, one right there. I mean,
I don't know if it was because she was already impregnated by the demon thing or whatever,
and that's why.
because if you watch it, she's sort of like out. Like she's not, it doesn't look like she's really alive. Like maybe her heart's beating or whatever, but she's not really there, you know, and stuff at the end. So they kind of leave it open where, I guess, is she like a vegetable that's kind of carrying the demon spawn of Satan, you know, like, I mean, or whatnot. But it's sort of like when they do that stuff like that, kind of pisses me off because I know that they're not going to make a sequel to this movie. Like it was never meant to have a sequel. So I'm like, I guess it leaves you up to your imagination of what will happen next. But like, I want to know. Like, I want to know where it's going to go from there. Did Ty West have an idea? You know, if I ever interview him, I'll ask him that question. I'll be like, "What did you have an idea of, like, where this movie would go after this, or is it just you just ended it right where you ended the movie, you know, in your head?"
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just me, but I mean, I kind of felt like if you cut the movie right when she like did the shot, and you hear the father yelling no, if you cut right there, I don't know. I felt like that would have been a really good suspenseful ending to the whole thing because I knew it threw me and my wife off because we were just like, yeah, she's gonna shoot him, she's gonna shoot him, and she's gonna try to get escape, and then she just bammed herself. Me and my wife both kind of like, oh snap, didn't see that one coming.
And then, of course, you don't see that she's still alive coming either, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
So I agree. Like it probably would have been a little bit more impactful because then they could have gone into credits and stuff, and you would have been like, shit, did that save her? Did that not save her? Is she, what's going on? You know, is the devil gone now? So yeah. Another movie you should check out if you like cult movies, check out Satanic Panic. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that one actually.
Yeah, look it up. I don't know if it's on Tubi or anything, but if you can find it somewhere, it's really good. I found it at the Dollar Tree, you know. So one of those, sadly, it's one of those movies, but it's really good. It's a really good movie. And it's got, you know, some crazy, it's kind of funny. It's more funny than anything, but it's got a lot of crazy shit happening in it. So I would highly recommend that.
No, listen, I'll definitely check out. I mean, I definitely do have a love for the demonic stuff. I mean, I absolutely adore at least the first three Omen movies, and actually the remake. I like the remake a lot too.
Which one?
The Omen.
Oh, the Omen, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was definitely a big fan of that one. I liked the original Suspiria. I thought that was really cool. Well, I wasn't a big fan of the remake. I just felt like they went way off the deep end on that one. They threw so much backstory in on that movie that I just felt like it didn't go anywhere. And the movie was already long enough. I think it ended up being clocked into a little over a 2 hour movie. And I was like, you could have made this a much tighter movie and made it like an hour and a half movie. And I think the story would have flowed more. Not sure if you've seen it, but like the remake, for example, The Groundskeeper, they go into all of his backstory, his back life with his wife and everything. You're thinking, all right, well, this has some type of relevance to what's happening in the story. At some point, there'll be some prevail where this comes into play. Nope. Had nothing to do with nothing. Just wanted to know more about the groundskeeper. I'm like, that was pointless.
Yeah, I hate when movies do that. Like, you just, at the end of the day, you're kind of wondering, like, is there a point to that? No, okay. Moving on, like, and I mean, look, Pulp Fiction, look at Pulp Fiction, right? Sure, there's a lot of dialogue that doesn't really have necessarily relevance, you think, but then later you realize they do. Like, even him talking to Jules about going to what is it? Going to Amsterdam and stuff or whatever.
Cheese.
Yeah, and the Royale and cheese and all that stuff. Later, he's talking to the guy about Amsterdam and stuff. Later, he's talking to the girl about Amsterdam, Mia, and everything. So like everything does sort of have a purpose. But it's not like the conversation sort of moves the plot along or whatever has to move the plot along. It's just like every connection, every scene has to sort of play. And I've learned this as a writer, and I feel like a lot of indie films don't do this because they think nobody cares. People aren't gonna care if this happens or that happens. They're just gonna want to see a cool movie or something, or whatever. But every scene sort of has to mean something in the story, in some way or another. You look at movies like Jaws, every scene in that movie, there's no thing that you could take out, and you would go, okay, that wasn't needed, necessarily. And so I truly think like films need to get back to that, but I don't know. I think and a lot of it's indie people, because indie people don't know how to write, because they're not, they're just learning right now and stuff. But whatever. Anyway, that's my soapbox. Sorry I was on it. I'm sure you feel sort of the same way, Michael.
Oh yeah, I mean, you made a lot of good points. Even going back to like the family films, like, and I enjoy family films. I really do. I was actually even a part of one. I had a small role in the Sawyer Massacre. It's a,
Nice. Good for
I'm actually
you.
one of the opening kills in
Bailey
the
was in that, wasn't she?
of who?
Bailey Harrington, I think.
Yes.
Yes. And if I'm correct, was Avery in that?
I'm not sure if Avery. I know William Enslow or Enstone from Butcher's Bluff, the creator, right, director of Butcher's Bluff. I know he was in it. I actually got to hang out and talk to him a little bit on set. He was actually a really cool dude.
Hold on, let me, what was it called? Sawyer family?
Avery, what was the last name?
Barry, if I'm correct.
Avery Berry.
I think she was. Yeah, she was in Sawyer Massacre.
Oh yes! Oh yes! Oh my God! How did I forget that? Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, yes, she was in there.
She's an up and coming actress that more people should check out. She's young. She's like 13, I
Oh
think,
yeah.
or something, but she's a
No, she is.
teenager. What?
Oh no, she is very talented.
Yeah.
I definitely start to see her getting picked up on other gigs. I definitely see that in her future. Absolutely.
Bailey and Avery are two people I really think are on their way up right now and stuff, including yourself,
Oh,
including
thank
you.
you.
But I'm just saying, like, there's those two and themselves. So I always follow whatever they're doing, because I just like, every time I see that. And I'm not, as I said, I'm not against fan films. I'm just,
There's no game.
I there's got to be a reason for it, and usually it's got to be a love for the series, right? So you don't
Exactly.
do Friday the 13th if you hate Friday the 13th. You're doing it because this is your chance to make a Friday the 13th film, because nobody else will let you, right? That's why I want to do Camp Crystal Lake, because it's like There's no way. I'm like a one in a million chance that Crystal Lake Entertainment's gonna be like, this guy's the next director of our Friday the 13th movie. Like, whatever. It's just like very, very slim chance, right? Maybe back in the day it was easier, but nowadays it's a little harder to do that. But then there's people who do it just because it's the thing to do right now, kind of thing. And once you do that, that's a problem. So I have like against that completely. Like if you the people that really have the love for it, the Sawyer Massacre people seem to really enjoy Leatherface and Texas Chainsaw. They filmed it in Texas, from what I remember hearing. Like it's absolutely a big thing. What was the other one? That I was thinking of. I actually reviewed a for the first time. Never reviewed a fan film, but my buddy. I don't know. I know you know Matt Skinner.
Oh, God.
Matt kept getting, kind of telling me, dude, you need to check this out, and you need to check this out. And then he goes, you need to review this. You need to review this and stuff. And I was like, I don't review. Like, I've never reviewed.
I think I know who it was too. Let me
It was
guess.
the what you guess.
Oh, which one?
Guess which one?
Valentine's Bluff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figure
Valentine's Bluff, which
he's been pushing the hell out of that
he
film.
has, man. And I'm like, dude, it's an indie, like it's an indie fan film. Why are you pushing it? Then I watched it and I was like, okay, I get it. Like
Oh no, they did a great job, and like that was one of those few I agree with you on. Like I was actually, just same as when Steve Merlot did Texas Chainsaw Massacre family film. It was one reason why I was like, okay, you know what? Like kind of like you, like I'm not the most biggest like gung ho fan of family films. And like I said, I have nothing against them. I just feel like from I guess this is the producer me talking out, coming out. There's no gain in making a family film. You can't profit off it. You can't make money off it. You can't sell copies to make a profit off of it. All you can do is make it and put it for free to watch. And don't get me wrong, it's a great way to get exposure. And if you're a filmmaker is starting to get off on like in the film world, that right there could be a good avenue because it will get you views. People will watch it. My other biggest concern about family films, not necessarily with them because they hit a good mark there. They hit franchises that are hardly ever touched. So that makes them a little bit more special. But then like the Friday 13th ones are the Halloween ones. I mean, there are
there's so
hundreds.
many of them. They're like a dime a dozen.
Exactly.
You're gonna get buried if you do one of those because so many people do them. Why don't somebody do a fan film of House of the Devil, or whatever? Give us the continuation story or what? See, that's kind of the stuff I want to see. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a franchise, but something like if you're a fan of like a movie that right, like that you loved. And you're like, I want to do a, I'm trying to find one that would be, sort of, that didn't have a sequel, or whatever. I can't even say 48 hours because there was another 48 hours. But something like that, where there was like no other movie, of it, a Big Trouble in Little China. Somebody did a re like a, a continuation remake or whatever, but their own fan film version of Big Trouble in Little China and did sort of the stuff like that. Like that would be so cool. Like that would be fun. But unfortunately, people go with the franchises because that's what everybody knows, like everybody knows Leatherface. Everybody knows My Bloody Valentine. Nobody done a Valentine, remember the Valentine movie? That came out, nobody's ever done
Richards
what?
with Denise Richards.
Yeah, Denise Richards, yeah. And David Boreanaz, Angel, and they nobody has ever done that as a fan film, or whatever. But they'll do Scream, which has like 600 fucking sequels and shit. And I'm just like, after a while, it's like, but all everybody's doing it, like. Get like do something that nobody does and everything. That's why I sort of liked. So I respect Chris Notarilli, who does fan films, because a lot of times he'll try to find ones that aren't well known, or whatever characters and stuff that only people of like who follow comic books actually would know who those are. Then all of a sudden, DC and Marvel start going, "Hey, let's start making our own Deadpool," right? Now, right? And whatnot. So, but back then, like, only people who followed Deadpool were talking about Deadpool. I never
True.
saw anybody before Chris did his own Deadpool, anybody even talk about Deadpool. Then all of a sudden, Marvel did their own Deadpool and everybody knew who Deadpool was, or whatever, I mean, everybody, not the people who knew who Deadpool was beforehand, Which I don't know if you were a fan of Deadpool before they actually made the movie.
I was actually a little bit of a fan. Matter of fact, let's see if I can get him over here. I have a full-size Deadpool statue over there in the corner.
Nice. He's staring at you. It's
Yeah,
kind of creepy.
I
All
got him,
right.
and Iron Man, and Rocket, and Groot. Oh, actually, it's a baby Groot.
Baby Groot. Nice.
I learned most of him through reading actually Spider-Man.
Nice. Nice. So you are, well, you're a Marvel fan, which is nice. Nice to
Actually,
see.
also, I'm a Marvel fan, but I'm actually a bigger DC fan.
It's interesting. That's a whole another conversation that we'll have to
Disappointed.
have. We'll have to have someday.
I definitely love Marvel a lot too, don't get me wrong, but like if someone put a gun at me point blank and said, you can only watch one thing, the movies, read the comics, play the video games of. You got to choose right now, DC, Marvel. I would say DC within a heartbeat because, I
I would
mean,
say Marvel and heartbeat.
anyway, but that's the beautiful thing about these kind of things, man, because
Look, I don't hate
it's
DC or anything. I'm not a DC hater. But I'm just not a DC lover necessarily. I don't think I'm gonna be supporting the Flash necessarily and stuff. Well, I mean, this whole another conversation, and I don't want to necessarily get in trouble for bringing that up.
I mean, I'm in that same boat. It hurts because I'll be honest, like I love the Snyderverse. I thought it was very well written, especially when you watch the uncut stuff when the studios didn't have their hands in it and you actually got to see what Snyder was trying to accomplish. And not only that, I actually read the story books on where he was planning on going with it. And what I loved so much about that was it was going to build up and it was going to turn into the Injustice story arc. And that is my favorite comic book run, and it's also one
Nice.
series. If anyone who's watched this, if you're comic book lovers, if you have not read the Injustice series that goes along with the video games, I highly recommend it. It is a new take on the characters. It is dark, it is gritty, and there are tear jerkers throughout the whole entire thing.
I'm gonna make sure to put in the introduction to this podcast and everything that we don't just talk about House of the Devil. We go into a lot of other shit, and so just be warned, people. That kind of thing. It's funny.
We talk about House of the Devil at least.
We do. Oh, and we talked about the whole movie, I think, like pretty much. I don't think we didn't talk about the pizza guy who that was so random. But like remember the pizza guy who just randomly showed up and she just grabbed it and paid him?
I thought that was Bolin who was the pizza man.
Yeah.
Oh
But
yeah.
like yeah, he was the pizza man, which I wonder, like when she called that number, was she calling him his house?
I think it was, or what it was, like I'm wondering if they had like some other phone line, maybe like a secondary line somewhere. Because like even in Black Christmas, like the original, for an example, they had multiple lines in that home because they even had the infamous "He's calling from inside the house."
Right. So maybe she
Because
was
the
calling from inside the house, I mean, I don't know. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, it was Bowen, but and she takes the pizza and then kicks him out or whatever, and stuff, and then just eats the pizza quickly, which I don't
Yes.
blame her because I would have been hungry too from, being scared to death, being there. I mean, stuff like that. Like it was an interesting All an interesting movie. If you haven't seen it, and we spoiled the shit out of the movie, sorry,
Okay.
but that's your fault for listening the whole time. If you have seen it, let us know what you guys think. Tell us if you guys enjoyed it. Are you guys big Ty West fans? It's funny to say, oh, I'm a big fan of Ty West now. And I was like, are you kidding me? I've known who this dude was. I've loved Cabin Fever too since I've seen it, you know. It's been a while, but I need to rewatch it at some point, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if that's on Blu-ray. I know it's on DVD, but I wonder if it's on Blu-ray. You know, the whole trilogy, you know, on Blu-ray. That'd be great. You know, I'd own that.
Yeah,
I mean, I have the original movie on Blu-ray.
I got part one on Blu-ray. Part three, I might have on Blu-ray too. I'd have to go back and check. It's in my collection. Part two, I have no doubt. I know for a fact that's definitely a DVD.
Part one, I have for Blu-ray, but I also have the DVD because the DVD or for Cabin Fever. Yeah, for Cabin Fever. If you watch the Cabin Fever DVD, there's audio commentary that, like, there's like four audio commentary tracks, five, something like that, four or five, with cast, different cast and crew members and stuff like that. The Blu-ray only has one commentary track. It's not any of those commentary tracks. It's a new commentary track. Now, that's awesome, right? Because you get a new commentary track, but sad that they didn't put on the original five too, so you get six there. But once again, all I have to do is turn on my DVD. So save the DVDs, everybody. It's maybe that's why they did that. So people would still buy the DVDs or whatever, you know?
Because we're just talking about Cabin Fever, something just popped my head. I just realized, any directors out there, can you all please put Ryder Storm in a movie and let him live and like actually let him be like you know the hero of the film? Because like I started looking back, like Borderland, which is one of the eight films to die for series, Cabin Fever, two, and then also what was the other? Oh, and then Hostel, three.
Who's in Hostel 3?
Yes, he was,
Nice.
and he always gets killed. It's just
That's
like,
directed by the Intruder director, by the
yep.
way, Scott Spiegel, who was actually one of the writers of Evil Dead 2. So big, he worked with Sam Raimi. So all of them, it's again all connected, you
Yeah,
know.
we're all.
And freaking what is it? Tarantino, man, just works with all these guys. You know, and shit, you know. And if you listen to the first Hostel commentary, there's Quentin Tarantino commentary with them, with like Eli Roth. And it just seemed like buddies hanging out with some people just chatting about the making of the movie. And Tarantino's just pointing out all these great stuff. Like they had, did you know in the first Hostel movie they had Takashi Miike, the director of like a Audition and whatnot, as the like the Japanese a businessman or whatever that was in it. It was
Oh, no, I
just
did not know.
so great, such great stuff. Like you gotta listen to these commentary tracks because you'll find so many awesome stories. So with that, I guess I'll end it and I'll say thank you so much. We almost talked 2 hours on this movie. Almost it'll be like an hour and 58 minutes or something, you know, like that. I mean, I guess I could stretch it, but I'm probably not going to. But I just want to say thank you so much, Michael. I definitely want to get you back for one of the other podcasts and stuff. And you really just enjoy chatting about movies, it seems. And I've been giving you a lot of crap, so I want to start giving you some good ones, you know, kind of make up for all the terrible movies I've made you watch, you know.
Hey, this last one was great, man. I mean, honestly, like I said, this was a winner for me. I said, don't get me wrong, I liked all the other ones we covered too, but I don't know, this one had something special behind it. Like I said, just how they grasped the 80s concept, and they nailed it across the board. Like, there's not one area. I mean, like I said, like you know, there are lots of people who go back to the 80s things, and they all do for the most part do good jobs. But I can usually find something in that mix. I'm like, eh, that's a little off.
We did it this movie. We found the ending to be like, you know, with her being in the hospital and stuff or whatever or not. Like, I agree. If they left it where she got shot and then she shot herself and then it cut to black, you know, or whatever, and then did the credits, I would have been like, damn, you know, I would have been like that. That would have had a bigger impact to me, you know, for sure. Just like the same thing of like that scene of AJ Bowen asking, oh, so you're not the babysitter? No, boom. Like that quick of a thing of like, I did not see that coming. I thought he was, I didn't know who this guy was, but I knew he was part of the cult. I thought he was going to bring her back or something, you know, and sacrifice her to the devil, you know, or whatever, you know, too. But like, I didn't expect him to just shoot the, you know, shoot the girl. But it was weird that she like pulled over to the side to go smoke a cigarette and, he's there, like, you know, in the woods, just waiting, you know, like, what the hell did I, how'd that happen? You know, like,
There
that's.
wasn't much of a delay of him getting there and stuff, especially if he was like how they insinuate later on that he was just camping out in that van out front. And it's like, well, he wouldn't be able to catch up to her that quickly.
No, he'd have to drive the van or something and then park it a little farther off. I don't know. Weird, but whatever. It was still a fun movie.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
totally recommend it.
Oh yeah, no. Like I said, this is one that goes in my collection. Like, you know, like if I find it on physical media, like somewhere, I'm gonna pick it up and add it.
Exactly. I agree. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much, Michael, and everybody. Thank you so much for checking this out. Next month, I want to see what I'm thinking about having. Do not quote me on this, but I think it's going to be another house movie. It's going to be House of Wax, the 2006 movie. But once again, don't quote me on that because I have no idea. But it'll be another guest and another, you know, thing. We'll have you back, Michael. Trust me, you're welcome back, you know,
Man, I'm
anytime.
on here, man. It's always fun hanging out with you, man. Just shooting the breeze, man. Talking about movies, man. You know, something that you and I both definitely have a big love for.
Exactly. And this did get a little off topic, but it was still a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. And everybody else, what?
I was just saying, I definitely did too, man.
Yeah, and everybody else, if you guys like this, let us know what you think. If you think we went a little too off topic, let me know so next time I can reel it back. I do do that, but I do that for a lot of ones, and Michael says he does it too. So us together, that's probably gonna happen more.
Okay,
But we did talk about the whole movie, so it did get talked about. It's not like we didn't do that. So thank you guys for checking this out, and hope you enjoyed it. Until then, bye.